This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss Cowain. Beauty and the Beast, the newest Disney animated feature, opens today, and the advance word is that it's going to be a hit. Newsweek said it already has the feel of a classic. When you go, expect an updated Beauty with an independent streak and lavish musical numbers with original songs. My guest today is the head animator for the character of the Beast, Glenn Keane. Keane started at Disney Studios in 1974, learning from some of Uncle Walt's old-time animators who used to hold training classes at night. While at Disney, Keane has drawn the bear fight in The Fox and the Hound and supervised the animation for Ariel in The Little Mermaid. When I spoke to Keane today from New York, I asked him if he had to audition for the right to draw the Beast in Beauty and the Beast.
Well, no, I didn't really have to audition because we have a... It's like a theater group of animators there that has gone from one picture to the next picture to the next picture. And so they all know my work, and it's more of like casting different artists in different parts. In the past, I've done... I get cast doing the big, powerful characters usually. There was a big bear I animated, a giant, and recently in Rescuers Down Under, it was a big eagle. But I'd also was a directing animator on Ariel, Little Mermaid. And so that was a big change for me. So they felt like, well, Glenn can do the big, powerful characters, but also sensitive. And that's really what Beast has to be.
Well, I must say, looking at the Beast, he appears to be really a concoction of animals.
Well, yeah, you're right, Marty. He's a combination of about, I don't know, 8 different creatures. See, when we first started the picture in London, I would have to walk to work each day, and I'd walk through the London Zoo and past this big cage of wolves. So it's the back legs of Beast are wolf legs. Then his there was a mandrill there in the zoo named Boris, and Boris and I got to know each other well because I'd go there each day and sketch him a lot, and he has kind of an exotic primate look. So Beast has a bit of a primate look in him. Then we needed like the cuddle factor because somewhere in there you knew Beauty was going to have to put her arms around this guy and feel like, gee, I could love this character. You know, he couldn't look like alien, you know, as in terms of ugliness. There had to be potential. So I put the mane of a lion on him. Probably the most inspiring animal, though, to me was a buffalo.
Uh-huh.
There's just a sadness and a heaviness that a buffalo has. And, you know, I hate to say it, but I had a buffalo head on my wall at work from a taxidermy place down the street. It's a constant reminder of the size and presence of that this was an animal and a big creature.
How much research did you do trying to understand his psyche? And it's clear, I think, from the way you're talking that you really spent a fair amount of time, I guess, doing a psychological study of who Beast is, and I assume even looking back into the old stories of Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, in every film that I work on, I usually write a whole, character study on him. How I feel, his expressions, what he wants, how he feels about himself, because as real as he is to me, that's how real he's going to become to the audience. If it's just a drawing, the audience finds him empty. But if the animator really just gets into that character, suddenly it becomes more than just moving characters on the screen. Like when I started at Disney, I started in 74 with the old guys that had done Pinocchio and Snow White, and they kept giving me this advice, and I didn't understand what they were saying, but they kept saying, Glenn, your work has got to be sincere. You know, make sure that the animation is sincere. And I thought, how do you draw sincere? And it came to me on one scene. It was one of the first scenes I animated, and it was just a very simple little scene of Bernard in the first Rescuers. He's sweeping, and I was struggling with this action of how do you draw this little mouse sweep? And I went to Eric Larson, one of Walt's, what he called his 9 old men, the key leaders in animation, and said, well, Eric, can you help me with this? And I expected him to do some drawing for me, and he said, well, Glenn, what kind of a job do you think Bernard wants to do? I said, what do you mean? I mean, he wants to do a good job, don't you think? I said, well, yeah, I guess he does. I'm like, come on, just show me how to draw him. And he says, well, of course he wants to do a good job. He wants every speck of dust off that floor. He really cares about it, doesn't he? I said, yeah, he does. Yeah, he's going to put his whole shoulder, his heart into this. He's going to make sure every speck of dust is off that floor, you know. And I left that room knowing exactly how to animate that without him doing one drawing. It was just that he really told me, you got to know that character. You have to feel the way that character feels before you can really animate it. And then it just rolled out of my fingers very easily. And from that, I think that's the baton that the old guys have passed on to this new generation of animators, is that whatever you animate, make sure that you're personally convicted and you believe in what it is that you're drawing.
Do you work with a mirror at all, using even your own face, your own eyes?
Yeah. Everything that the character is doing there, I'm sort of doing on my own face. We tend to draw ourselves into the characters. Even if, you know, like I was doing Ariel, the directors would say, Glenn, that's you. That looks just like you. I said, oh, man, come on. I hope I'm not drawing her like me. It's no, it's in a good way. I mean, I can see your expressions in her translated.
But this is an unconscious process you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, you don't try to do it that way. It's just naturally. You draw because you're looking at your face. You're feeling, like I'll do mouth movements and I'll feel, let's see, how much of my canines are showing here? And I'll draw it out. I'll look at it in the mirror. It's really just trying to draw how I feel and what expressions I feel on my face and put it into the acting.
I'm speaking with Glenn Keane, and he's a supervising animator who designed and drew the Beast in Disney's latest movie, Beauty and the Beast. Where do you start in the drawing process? Do you have voices? Where do the voices come in? And
well, I mean, that's a very key part there. You don't really know the character until you've got the actor who's doing the voice. I can only get a design up to a certain level, but then the character is going to change that. In this case, I designed the Beast, and then we were still searching for a voice. We had voices like Tim Curry, who'd done The Devil in Legend, more of a deep baritone, and it just didn't seem like there was a young man inside of this Beast. We somehow had to get a sensitive, gentle side to him and yet still have a beast side. So we started listening to a whole bunch of different tapes. The directors, Kirk and Gary, gave to me a tape with 12 different voices that they'd boiled it down to. And they said, well, Glenn, listen to these and see which ones you think. And they were going to listen to it as well that weekend. And I remember doing dishes at home and just listening to each of the voices. I didn't know who was who, and waiting for one of them to trigger the design that I had already drawn, trigger it acting and moving around in my head. And as soon as this one voice popped on, Beast was alive. He was moving. I could see the expressions acting and just coming out of the Beast. And so I stopped and looked back, and it was Robbie Benson.
And I think that would surprise a lot of the audience.
Well, it surprised me, too, because I think your perception of Robbie is not to do this big, beastly character. But that's a real mistake, and from any artist's viewpoint, to pigeonhole somebody into what they can't do. I think often if you ask somebody to do what's out of their norm, you're going to get the best performance of that person's life. And I feel like that happened with Robbie Benson.
What are the tools of your trade? Is it as simple as paper and pencil?
Well, basically it is. All the modern technologies and things that have been invented with computers and all of that, that has not changed a painter's approach or a musician's approach. He still has to work note by note if he's writing a song. Or as an artist, he still has to do 24 drawings for every second that you see on the screen. That's in terms of acting, you've got to be able to have a drawing that's going to express an emotion and a character, and then a series of them that shows how that character is going to move from one expression into the next. You're seeing changes. But the way I look at it is it's not tedious. I think that's the thing most people wonder is, well, don't they have computers that do that stuff for you guys now? I mean, you're like living in Stone Ages. And it's like, well, no, I don't look at it that way at all. It's like, You know, does a musician think of a song that he's writing, note by note? He says, no, he thinks of a melody. And as an animator, I don't think of it drawing by drawing. It's a performance. It's a whole action and an emotion that I'm portraying. And I'll rough through that scene really fast. See, my drawings, if you saw them, they're more like gesture sketches, very quick, maybe some just done in 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 30 seconds. And I'll rough through a whole acting performance there. And then once I get all of that out onto the page, and I'll shoot it to see how it acts, play it with the voice, because we have the voice recorded first, then I do my acting based on what I hear. Then when it's right, I'll go in and I'll tie it down and do the more finished drawing, which you would expect to see from a Disney animator.
Knowing that kids will bring their parents with them to see Disney movies, do you make visual references to the adults in the audience?
Well, the pictures that we make, we don't make them for kids necessarily. We really make them for ourselves. And since we're a bunch of adults, that's the natural part. Then we do add in stuff for the kids. I mean, it's more the other way around,
right.
Especially this story, which is such an emotional and there's such a deep underlying themes about what is love, how do we view beauty in life, and these are some really important topics and very adult themes.
So the kids are an afterthought?
Well, kind of, in a way. You know, we put a lot of the jokes and gags in there. The heart is really where you start with, and that's going to be more appealing to the adults in a lot of ways. Though the kids love it, but they don't particularly know why at that point.
I'm speaking with Glenn Keane, and he's the supervising animator. He designed and drew The Beast in Beauty and the Beast. He's been with Disney Studios for 16 years, and he has worked on other Disney classics, including The Bear Fight in The Fox and the Hound, Professor Radigan in The Great Mouse Detective, Ariel in The Little Mermaid, and Marahout in The Rescuers Down Under. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with animator Glenn Keane. What cartoons did you enjoy watching when you were a kid?
Well, the first one I remember was a Popeye cartoon with Sinbad. And there was this huge bird that took off and took olive oil to this island, and Popeye went to rescue her. And it was just so real to me, where Popeye's going into this cave and there's these lions. And it was just... Oh,
are you describing an epiphany?
I couldn't believe it, that this wasn't a cartoon to me. Well, I had no idea that anybody drew this stuff. As a kid, I didn't think that way. It was just real. I guess I still look at it that way as I'm animating. I'm not drawing it. It's just really happening. I just happen to have my fingers in the right place at the right time. Then the next picture that I really remember having an impact on me was, that must have been the Popeye one. I had to be 4 or 5 years old. The next one was 101 Dalmatians when I was about 6. I went to see it with my family. They took me to that on my birthday. And once again, that film was so real. I mean, if you think about it, it's probably true to most listeners, is that the films that they remember as the most real, having the most impact on them, were not the live-action pictures. They were the animated features, because it has nothing to do with that it's just a pretend drawing or something. That Cruella was a witch. I was frightened of her. You know, I was just really afraid of that woman, that she was going to do something to our family dog. And I feel like I've brought that same attitude back into the work that we do now, that we look at it as very real. This isn't just pretend. I would love to see the Academy actually start looking at animation that way.
You were a cartoon character yourself. You were Billy in your father's cartoon strip, The Family Circus.
Yeah. Dad based the Family Circus on his own real family. So, like, if we did goofy stuff around at home, he'd try to draw that into the comic strip, you know. Of course, it was never really odd. You didn't, you know, Dad wouldn't say, look, kids, I'm really low on gags. Will you do something funny today? I didn't even think it was unusual. I just thought every kid's dad was an artist. Until one day at grade school, some kid came up to me and said, you think you're so big because your dad draws the Family Circus. I thought, gee, I thought he drew the better half. I didn't even realize that he drew the Family Circus. To me, it was just normal. Everybody's dad drew. Dad worked at home in the studio attached to the house. So anytime I needed to get help with drawings, I'd go out there and he'd go over my work with me. And it was great having a live-in teacher.
And that was what he was for you? I mean, he taught you how to draw?
Yeah. Yeah, one of the best things I think Dad did for me is he gave me a book called Dynamic Anatomy by Bern Hogarth. In fourth grade, I had that book, and I immediately started thinking of my art not in terms of drawing cartoons, which I really appreciate my dad's influence that way, that he started making me look at figure and learning the bone structure and the skeleton and muscles. And I remember going in the bus to school with some drawings I had done of the thinker and the discus thrower and all the muscles and on these figures. Of course, the guys had no clothes on, though. And I remember sitting on the bus. I was really proud of these drawings, and I was going to take them to fourth grade. And other kids in the class were looking at these drawings I had done, and they were making fun of me. Look at Keane's drawing naked guys. Ah! I thought, what's wrong with this? I didn't realize there was a problem with it until everybody started making fun of me for doing that. I realized, I guess, at that time that there was a difference in the what I saw was really important to what I wanted to do, and most of the other kids, and they didn't really see drawing as the way I saw it. Drawing to them was just fun and cartoons. I really was taking it pretty seriously, I think.
Do you watch Saturday morning cartoons with your kids?
The only time I watch it is just to see what it is that's going into their heads. You know, I really don't watch it much because they're under such different limitations than we are. They have to produce so much more work, so much faster, that it's almost a whole different medium than what we do in the animated features. And it's easy to be critical of it from my standpoint, but I don't think it's very fair to be too critical because put in the same position, I'm not sure how I could do it. Actually, I don't think that I would be in animation if I had to work on Saturday morning. I would go into painting or sculpture or something else that I could really express myself in.
Is that because of the limitation of the emotions? From my observations, it seems that Saturday morning cartoons are either kind of cold and stylized and sort of emotionless, or it's the syrupy, cuddly, sentimental emotions.
Well, the animators aren't given the time to really pour themselves into those characters. And much of the animation is done overseas in Japan, and often it's based on some American animators drawing some poses, sending it to Japan, and those Japanese animators kind of filling in, making it move. So it really takes ownership away from any individual person really expressing themselves. It's such a factory approach that it's you don't get that passion, I think, that you sense in watching Beauty and the Beast, that there's a bunch of artists who really poured themselves into this. Not that people don't put everything they've got into it. It's just the time frame that it happens. It's so fast, you don't really have a chance to express yourself.
Do you watch The Simpsons at all?
Yeah, I do. I've seen that. Well, my kids really love to watch it. I think the writing is fantastic on it.
And the drawing?
The drawing, well, to be honest, it bugs me because for everything that I put into my work is trying to analyze what I see in real life and trying to translate that into my drawing. I mean, it may be the way a little girl will sit in a chair with her feet kind of curled up underneath her and kind of her feet playing with her shoes, and that's interesting to me, or the way their subtle hand gestures, or all those things, that's what I try to put into my work, and The Simpsons aren't approaching it that way. So I see it as something very different than what I'm working on. So I can't criticize the drawing from it because they're not trying to do what I'm doing. But it's, I don't know. I guess it's an area that I'm trying to broaden my horizons and leave room for other people, because certainly I enjoy it and I can't deny that.
Do you doodle a lot? I mean, are you always kind of sketching and
yeah,
pen or pencil in hand?
Yeah, I've got my pen and pad right here.
Yeah, what are you doing?
I'm doing a drawing of you. You happen to look like... No, I'm trying to, everywhere I go, bring my sketch pad with me and draw everybody I see or places I go, just because it's a, I want that kind of avenue to keep open. I don't want it to kind of close up where from what I see in the world around me starts, I want it to be able to come through my fingers. And the wider I can make those channels, the better animation I feel I'm going to be able to do. Every time I go out to dinner with my wife, I've got my sketch pad and I've got a lot of drawings of her eating.
Is that kind of staying in shape in between projects?
Yeah, I guess it is. You know, I don't look at drawing as, it is a discipline, but it's a love. And you'd think mm-hmm. after drawing, you know, all day long, that's the last thing I'd want to do. But that's not the case. I would love to get a chance to do other kinds of drawing and painting and sculpture on the side. I think that a frustration any artist has is that you're not going to have enough time in this life to express all the things that you see and feel about, you know, what God has made. And you want a chance to do that and to say something back to the world.
Do you know what your next project is going to be?
Yeah, I'm right now working on Aladdin. In this picture, I'm doing the character of Aladdin. And I guess the same challenges that I had with Ariel, where you want to do a princess that kind of breaks the mold a little bit. I want to do that with Aladdin and break the mold of the prince.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Animator Glenn Keane, he supervised the animation for The Beast in the new Disney film, Beauty and the Beast. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, and this is Fresh Air.